is TAN Talk, entertaining and informative radio for the Sunshine State.
You may be owed some money. After 911 and 411, call 541. That's 727-541-1741. Call Gulfstream Motorsports for a diminished value report. Due to my 28 years experience in the auto salvage business, I'm very good with wrecks. So if your car's been involved in a wreck, call me for a diminished value report. Call 727-541-1741. You may be owed some money for the lost value of your repaired vehicle. And visit us at GulfstreamMotorsports.com.
Looking for car shows? Then look no further than flacarshows.com. On your computer or on your mobile device, flacarshows.com is a comprehensive list of automotive events, plus videos and news articles. Whether you're looking for car shows, cruise-ins, meetups, automotive festivals, cars and coffees, or anything else relating to an internal combustion engine, then this is a site for you. Check it out online or on your phone at flacarshows.com.
Introducing the new Yugo, a Paramount engineering achievement from Yugoslavia. From busy traffic to rough terrain, Yugo will lead you anywhere. From the west to east coast, Yugo defeats the competitors. Reliability is his second name. Dependability and safety now have a totally new meaning. Do not hold your horses. Your dream of a tough, dependable car can finally be fulfilled. Buy yourself some freedom. Buy a Yugo. Yugo. More freedom for less money.
Welcome to the auto show.
We need an inexpensive,
dependable
first car.
See the Yugo.
I need a tough little car.
See the Yugo. We need a safe,
economical
second car.
Oh, see the Yugo.
For most of the reasons you need a car, the Yugo is all the car you need.
Wow! $39.90.
Maybe you don't want to spend more than $39.90 for a new car, but until now you've had to. Everybody needs a Yugo sometime. Yugo, $39.90.
When it comes to building tough, dependable cars at America's most affordable prices, Yugo leads the way. Others are trying to follow but can't match Yugo's reliability for the price. Now Yugo leads with a 4-year, 40,000-mile warranty. And for 1 year or 12,000 miles, all you pay for is the gas. That's peace of mind. That's confidence. That's Yugo. For your nearest dealer, call 1-800-USA-YUGO. Yugo, committed to building the toughest, most dependable cars a little money can buy.
Everybody needs a Yugo sometime.
I bought my Yugo because now I can afford a brand new car.
I think it's fun to drive, and it beats my old carpool.
I like the rack and pinion steering and the front wheel drive.
We wanted a dependable second car.
And this Yugo's just what we need.
The 87 Yugo GV is still only $39.90. Call 1-800-USA-YUGO for the dealer nearest you.
Everybody needs a Yugo sometime.
With 357 improvements to the new Yugo, we're going to take one and shake it till something comes loose.
The reliable new Yugo. Now for just $4,400 and some change.
And now for all you music lovers, it's time for your... Oh! What is it, Scooby? Can't you see I'm broadcasting here? Hang on, folks. I've just been handed this important bulletin. Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our regularly scheduled program to bring you this special report. Like live, as it happens.
Hey, sports fans. Peter Brock here from BRE Racing and AeroVault Trailers. Listen to Nostalgic Radio and Cars, the best automobile show in the Southeast.
Okay, listeners, welcome. You're tuned in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars, and I'm your show host, Robert. Run your computers and Google TAN Talk 1340.com, and you can see me live here in the studios in downtown Clearwater. Don't forget to check out our website, GulfstreamMotorsports.com. where you can find out all about us. And if you missed any of our 700 and, what are we, 13, 14, somewhere in there? 13 shows, check out our website, nostalgicradioandcars.com. Good evening, Bobby. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
How does it feel to sit in the driver's seat?
Be a nice time here in the driver's seat.
Yeah. Okay. Well, a big shout out to all
feels
of
our... Feels good.
Yeah, good.
All right, it'll be 714 tonight, though.
714 tonight?
Yes.
Okay, 714. See, I'm trying to think if 714 is like significant. Could be. We'll have to think of something. Anyway, all right, so we got a great show for you now. We got a very special guest. We got probably a two-part show coming on. Now, the clue as to who our guest is going to be, well, if you follow us on Facebook, you'll know. But if you just tuned in... you go here, you go there, you go everywhere. So, on that note, let's see, what do we got coming up? Well, this past weekend, let me just tell you real quick what we did. We went to the Bay Life Car Show over in Brandon. I went over there with my friends IG and Mike. Mike, big shout out to Mikey. And it was a pretty impressive car show. I was told it was going to be about 500, 600, 700 cars there. There was quite a few cars, real interesting cars. Met some interesting people. Met a friend of mine from body shop manager from Brandon Ford. So if you need your Ford fix, go to Brandon Ford, particularly if you need body work. Judd, he's the guy. And then Angelo is the gentleman that puts on the Bay Life event. It's a charity function, car show. And he also does the Lake Mirror show, which will be in, I think that's when, end of September, October, somewhere around that time. And also, I met an interesting guy there that had, there was a couple of cool cars there that got my attention. Obviously, besides the Mustangs and the Cougars, was a Ford GT replica, real nice car, and of course a 71, 72, or 72 Pantera, actually. Pretty interesting car, I like that. And then, of course, you know, your usual, you know, Fords and Chevys and Chryslers and cool cars like that, and a few Chevy trucks, a few Ford trucks, nice stuff. And an assortment of vintage cars, Triumphs, Spitfires. There was actually a Morgan there. Surprised to see that. A couple MGs as usual. Volkswagens, lots of Volkswagens. Anyway, coming up here in the next week or two, well, this coming weekend, everybody's going to be up at Ford at Carlisle. Maybe I'll go. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. And then a week after that, we have the HSR event in Watkins Glen, which I would really like to go to that because Watkins Glen is a historic racetrack. Actually, I think they had the first Grand Prix, the U.S. Grand Prix, the first one I think was at Watkins Glen, but I could stand corrected. Anyway, and then, of course, if you want to find out where all the car shows are here in the state of Florida, definitely check out flacarshows.com. And on that note, I think Bobby's going to fire up the stereo.
I can do that.
And we're going to be right back with our special guest for the evening while I change out my seat. I'll be right back. Don't touch dial. Here's a really cool old band. It's called the Remo 4. Am I correct on that, Bobby?
That is correct.
And this is their version of Peter Gunn. And a couple of the original cast or members of the band actually went to school with Paul McCartney. So they're part of the original Liverpool crowd, the Beat crowd, you know, they called them, Beat Music. And so I hope you enjoy this. I like his version of Peter Gunn. So you tune into Nostalgic Radio and Cars, don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Thank you. Hee-haw!
I have a deal for you that is fantastic, and I don't think it can be beat, because it's right back of that curtain, and this is what you may own in the next few months. It is America's newest sports car.
And that's the Brooklyn, with safety as the most important design factor. Dramatic styling, luxurious interior, and the unique gull-wing doors for both safety and convenience. Brooklyn, the car of tomorrow, today. From Brooklyn Vehicle Corporation, that retails for $7,695, and we're adding tax and license for a total of $8,920.70.
That automobile, which is the latest, newest sports car on the market, worth $9,000 the way we're going to give it to you, if you win it, would put you in very exclusive company, because there are no more than 500 people in the world that own one of those. And it may be 501 in just a few seconds. Wasn't that car interesting?
Oh, man. Fabulous.
For guys like you, it'd be very interesting. Press a button, the whole thing gets out, and a guy like you can slip in very easily.
I certainly hope so.
We slim people don't have to worry about such things.
This is Bill Warner of the Amelia Island Concours d'Elegance, and you are listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
Okay, we're back, and it's time to introduce our special guest for the evening, and I'm delighted to welcome a very, very interesting gentleman. He's a successful entrepreneur, an automobile importer, and the father of the Brooklyn himself, Mr. Malcolm Brooklyn. Malcolm, welcome to Nostalgic Radio and Cars this evening. Delighted to have you here with us.
Robert, boy, it was a long time before. I mean, 50 years ago, I think I heard that commercial.
How did you tell us exactly how that works? If you want to get a car on Let's Make a Deal, how do you go about doing that? Because that was pretty clever marketing from my standpoint.
Well, there was a PR firm in California, Rogers and Cowan, that only had big major stars as their clients. And I went to them and said, how would you like to get in the commercialized business and make my car a star? And they went for it. And that's what they did.
Wow. Well, it worked very well. All right. So, Malcolm, tell us a little bit. Give us, for our first time for our listeners, give us a little background on yourself. So you're actually, and I'll just fast forward it. So you were born in Pennsylvania, and you grew up to Florida, and you went to the University of Florida. So how did you?
I did.
How did your passion? So you're almost a native, really, Floridian in a way. How did your passion for cars begin?
Well, actually, it wasn't the passion for cars. I fell into it. I mean, it's a long story, but I started with. I actually can't even get started because it'll take hours just to talk about it.
Okay.
But I ended up in Fuji Heavy Industries, trying to convince them to sell me their motor scooters, which they had dismantled. They were dismantling the factory and selling it to Israel. And forget the backstory, but I couldn't talk them into it. But they showed me all around, and they showed me everything they built. And rather than waste my time, I said, hey, how about that little car? That little car was going to cost me $640 FOB Yokohama. I figured I didn't know anything about cars, but I sure as hell could sell that car for $1,200, and they gave it to me after a whole bunch of interesting stories, which is for another time. And I started to set up dealers, and we started to sell them, and things were going good, and I gave them letters of credit, and Consumer Report came out, and they had a front page, a front cover of a Cadillac head-to-head with this little 360, and just ripped it apart because it didn't have to meet the safety regulations. It was under 1,000 pounds. And I thought, big deal, so some people won't buy it. Well, it turned out that all the banks read it, and they cut off the floor planning, and I was now in a big, serious problem. I went back to Japan and talked them into giving me their bigger car, the one with front-wheel drive, and Subaru of America went from there to terrific.
Very interesting. So you went over to import scooters on the premise that, you know, we needed economical transportation. You wound up with the Subaru 360, which kind of, for our listeners, looks a little like a Volkswagen, okay, with suicide doors, and which is a real cute car. By the way, there's one for sale in Fort Myers for $2,500, given the fact that they were, what, $1,200, $1,300 when they were brand new.
There's some that are $7,000 and $8,000 now.
Yeah, they're highly collectible.
Well, so, they got 66 miles to the gallon, and they were really cute cars. More room than you would imagine, and people really like them, except Consumer Report ruined it, and that was the end of the little car. But thank God, because the bigger car was what really people were interested in front-wheel drive and then all-wheel drive. And the one thing really good about those cars, they were built to last. The warranty cost was next to nothing.
Well, let me ask you a question. Okay, so you basically could say that you started and founded Subaru of America to some extent, correct? And then you
not to some extent. I founded Subaru of America.
Okay. So then how long did you stay in with Subaru of America?
Well, I founded it in 68 and 69 and 70. Then we started signing up distributors because we didn't really know too much about cars. And we figured if we got car people to be our distributors instead of the dealers, we have really good dealers, and it worked out great. And then, because Consumer Report had done such a number on how it was not a good safety car, it always is in my head that I had to prove them, I had to do something, and I was going to build the most gorgeous car in the world and going to be the safest car in the world. And that's actually what drove me to build the Bricklin. It was called the Bricklin SV1, Safety Vehicle 1. It had 10-mile-an-hour bumpers. The gullwing doors were so that you kept it out of. When you opened the door, you could open it right next to someplace. You didn't put it in the door didn't open into traffic. And we had a hand grenade pin so you could pull it and push the door out if you were upside down. I mean, we put every safety device known to man in that car.
Tell us how the original concept for the Bricklin came. I mean, in other words, so we got gullwing doors, we got all the safety features. Did you borrow cues from other manufacturers? I mean, the gullwing, first thing that comes to mind is obviously the Mercedes 300 SL, you know.
Right.
And I do know, because I remember as a kid in the 60s, Checker was experimenting with these funny, goofy, water-loaded bumpers. There were like an impact bumper. Then when you hit on impact, these little plugs would pop out and the water would squirt out and it would kind of basically absorb the impact. But I'm just throwing that in there. But what was it that was kind of the nucleus for some of the other for
well,
the design?
We had 10-mile-an-hour bumpers that nobody ever did. That means it went in and out up to 10 miles an hour. No damage to anything, including the bumpers. Because what I did is I got people who designed the airplane landing gear to make the pieces that I needed to put behind the bumpers so it would go in and out of the body. And then the next problem was a paint factory at those days cost $300 million. I did my whole project from start to beginning for under $30 million. So I couldn't afford $300 million for a paint factory. So I went to Roman Haas and I bought from them the acrylic sheet that went into bathroom walls and then built the biggest vacuum forming machine in the world and vacuum formed the exterior body and reinforced it with fiberglass and made the following claim. That one, you could not dent the car. If you hit it hard enough, you could make a hole in it and you could put the hole back in and buff it. And that 50 years from the day you bought it, that car body would look the same as long as you polished it whenever you wanted to polish it, to take off the grime. And it does. Its 50th anniversary is this year, and that acrylic, which is a 1/8-inch solid paint, in effect, reinforced with fiberglass, did everything we said it would do.
So it's not a gel coat or anything like that?
No. It's an acrylic body reinforced with fiberglass that looks fabulous, and you can't dent it.
Interesting. Now, when you set up manufacturing, you went to, was the car designed in the United States? Because the manufacturing plant was actually set up in almost in Newfie. I mean, it's up in New Brunswick, which is northeast of Wayne.
New Brunswick, Canada. And we designed the car and built the prototypes in Detroit.
Okay. How long did it take from drawing plans to concept car, prototype? How long did it take to build the Bricklin?
Well, let me tell you, from the day I said, I'm going to build a car, and I had no idea what I was talking about. I had no idea what I was going to have to put up in money. It took 2 years until it came off the line, including finding an empty old paint factory in New Brunswick, Georgia, and Canada, rather, and turning it into a modern factory to build cars. We built 3,000 cars. And then the interesting story. And by the way, a musical was written about what I'm about to tell you and did pretty good for 3 years out there. And if you go to Google, I think you can pick up a tape of what that musical was. I think it was called Bricklin, an Automotive Fantasy, or something like that. Anyhow, the premier in New Brunswick was the man I met to make my deal. I said, I will get more publicity in the whole world, which is what he wanted. I said, and you got to finance the factory and whatever it costs to get it built. So we made a deal. And he was with me on television shows, and everywhere we went, he was with me on that. And one day he walked in and said, I need three cars. I said, sure, what colors and what for? He told me the colors, and he told me he's calling an election. And the first car is going to come to build the crowd. The second car was going to have his mother in it. The third car was going to be him. And the day they won, the front page of all the papers was the Bricklin, the premier wins the Bricklin election. It had a picture, a cartoon of a Superman coming out of the top of the Goldwing doors. I thought, wow, isn't that great? I guess we really own this province. Well, 3 months later, he came to visit me. And he says, Malcolm, I got some bad news for you. I'm going to close you down. I said, what are you talking about? We got 46,000 back orders. We're only hoping to build 12,000 a year. We got 4 years of back orders. You got 1,200 people getting UAW wages. Why would you even say that as a joke? He said, well, let me tell you. I made a mistake. I used the Bricklin to win an election. And here's what happens every day when I come down to talk to the press. They have two questions. How's Malcolm and how's the car? I don't have a political career anymore. So I made the hard decision. I'm closing it down. I'm going to take a lot of heat. A year from now, I'm going to call an election, and it's going to be my election. And that's exactly what he did. He closed this down. He waited a year. He called another election, and he won.
That's shameful.
That, by the way, was a big shock in my life, and it was probably the most important lesson I ever learned.
Not to trust politicians?
Not to get involved with political anything.
No kidding. Whoa. All right, so let's talk about the car a little bit. When you built the prototype, I believe there was kind of an interesting guy that was involved in the development of it, the drawings and the plans.
All car guys were involved in developing it, yeah.
What was his name?
You know what? You hit me and I
okay.
Just,
well, anyway, all right. So because,
I'll remember before we keep on going.
All right. Well, that's good. So food for thought. Okay. So because the thing was is that your initial concept of the car, okay, did you have a vision of the drawing of the silhouette of what you wanted? Did you have that in your head? Or did you just basically go to somebody and said,
no,
here's
how it started. We had a California office with Subaru.
Okay.
And I met some people. And one thing led to another, and the guy that developed the dune buggy came to see me, and we start talking, and I told him, here's what I'm looking at, give me some drawings, and he gave me some drawings, and we built a what I thought was going to be the prototype. When somebody, and you know, I would tell him, no, I want that way, and then he would draw it, and then I'd make, so I didn't have a clear picture in my mind. I let people give me drawings, and I would start to alter the drawings. And as they would draw, I would sit over their shoulder and move their hand around, you know, and move it this way, that way. So what I did was correct rather than come up with the concept. I knew I wanted Goldwing doors. That's all I knew for sure. And I thought I wanted 25-mile-an-hour bumpers, but that was way out of the question when I finally realized what it would look like. But in any case, I had this thing we called the Gray Ghost, and I used that to raise money from the bank, actually loans from the bank on my Subaru stock. And then I brought it. Then I met some people who knew what the hell they were talking about. And they brought me into Detroit, and we interviewed a number of people in the design business. And finally, we agreed on the person to do it. And then he made modifications to make it even better than what it was. And when he was finally done, I was very proud of it. I said, the car has to look like tomorrow. And the anniversary, the 50th anniversary, is 2024. And it looks like tomorrow when you see it on the street.
Interesting, because the guy that you mentioned that you first talked about with was actually Bruce Meyer from.
Bruce Meyer is absolutely what a great guy he is.
He was on our show a number of years ago. He was 92 years old, super guy. I truly enjoyed having him on the show as a guest. But yeah, so he was involved with your original project, and then went to Detroit. And I was listening to one of the reading an article there where it was talking about you had some people, whether it's the bankers, financiers, whatever, they wanted to come look at the car. The car wasn't quite done yet, and the designer ran out to the back of his to his car in the parking lot, robbed the taillights off the back of his Pantera, I might add, and put those on your car, and that's basically, which is they're essentially Fiats, so he put those on there, and that stuck. I mean, so and then the design was basically refined a little bit, and you have what you have now. So then how about the drivetrain, the engines, and the power plants? What was in your mind? Because wasn't your original intent to try to compete with the Corvette a little bit, you know, as America's sports car?
Absolutely. In fact, Car and Driver and Motor Trend had us on the front cover next to a Corvette, and they said, and I quote, "It's equal to the Corvette in everything else except its sexier." And we went out first for American Motors 360 that was given, that they bought from Jeep, actually. And it was a great, for our car, it was really great. Everything was great about it. We could buy four speeds if we wanted. We thought we had a really great deal. We had signed papers with American Motors, you know, to produce it, and they'd give us $1,000 a month. And about 3 months before the car was ready, I got notified American Motors won't sell us the engine. Now, understand, the car was engineered to put in their engine. We had to do a 50,000 miles environmental test to go for that. I mean, it was amazing how much money we had to spend to get it all ready, and now I'm being told I can't have the engine. At the time, I think Mr. Lunenberg was the president of American Motors. So I called up his secretary and I told him I had to see him immediately. And they said, no, he's busy. I said, tell him I'm either going to see him immediately or I'm going to be in Washington. In Washington, talking to the people in Washington about how the big three and the big four are looking to put me out of business. So I got a message, be here at 9:00. So I went there with a couple of my guys. He had a bunch of his people there. And he told me, listen, young man, I have tried all my life to sell these cars. I can now sell every car I build. And every engine I sell you is a car I can't build, and I'm not doing that. I said, well, let me tell you something. I have my money involved in this, and if you don't sell me the engine, I'm dead. You're pushing me out the window. And if I'm going out the window, I'm grabbing your thigh, and I'm landing on your belly. Out there. I'm walking out this door. I'm going to Washington, and you're going to wish you sold me the engine. And then he gave me a few besides son of a bitch words. And he said, okay, you young whatever the hell you had to say, not for radio.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you what, you can have 700 engines and find something else. Don't talk to me again. I said, thank you very much, and I apologize for my rude behavior. I informed him that my life was at stake here, but thank you so much, and left. Now, I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do. How am I going to, you know, what engine do I want to put in here? It's got to fit the same thing. Everything else is engineered around this size engine. And I walk into my Livonia office after that meeting, and Keith Crane, who was publisher of Automotive News, is sitting there, and somebody else. And I said, come on, Keith, come on back. And Keith, who owned Automotive News, and he and I were had become very close with Subaru. He did a lot of stories on us. And he said, Malcolm, what goes with you? You're not going to give us any stories on what the hell you're doing? And my photographer came in to take a picture of your prototype, and your guys broke his camera. I said, we don't want any publicity. He said, you're making a mistake. I can help you or I can hurt you. And then he said, who's that? Boy, my names are losing. I'm trying to think of the name. Anyhow, he said, why is he out there? And he tells me, and I said, who is he? He said, he's Iacocca, the right-hand man. No kidding. Okay, Keith, I'll tell you what. You can have a story next week. You can have a photographer. You can take some pictures, not a whole full car, but some sexy pictures if you want. See you later. Goodbye. And I had the other guy come in. I'll remember his name before the end of the conversation. And anyhow, he came in, And I said, hi, how are you? And he said, Lee Iacocca sent me, and he wanted me to see if you would let me see what you're doing. We're just curious. I said, well, don't you build the 351 in Canada, the Windsor engine? He said, yeah. I said, you know, I need more Canadian content because I'm going to have the car built in Canada. Can I buy your engine? He said, sure, no problem. How many do you need? I said, I'm looking for 1,000 a month. He said, no problem. I said, great. Would you draw up a contract? Absolutely. And my life was saved. Now, the 351 was not as good as the 360, that's for sure. But it's been our thing, and it did the job. And that saved my life.
Well, now, the original cars, were, you had a few of them that were manual transmission cars with the 360. All the Ford-powered ones were all automatics. How come there was no manuals?
There were 50 four-speed that they gave us, and that was it.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm going to draw an analogy here, and then maybe you can help me out here. So what comes to mind here is Tucker and DeLorean, okay? And you've got... You're David, and they're Goliath. So, basically, it was like this little guy coming up with a car that's really no threat to the big three. Why do you feel that, as in the case with Tucker, and to some extent DeLorean, why do you feel that they were trying to basically... I mean, like AMC, for example, to sit there and say... Oh,
no, they weren't really trying to do anything. They didn't give a damn.
Okay.
Except that it was a safety vehicle. They weren't excited about that. And Tucker wasn't any, and he built 50 prototypes, and that's as far as he ever got. Now, John DeLorean is a different story. John and I were good friends. John's brother worked for me in a company I had called Fast Track, and his brother asked if they could show, he could show that to his brother, because I was using it to get rid of the 360s that I had ordered, and I said, when it's over, I'm not going to continue building these tracks. And he and Roger Penske, because of that, ended up building their Malibu Grand Prix. It was not as homey as mine, so it didn't really have the same flavor. And unfortunately for them, they spent a lot of money, and I don't think it worked that great. Now, one day I get a call from John DeLorean. I'm still in the prototype stage. He said, next time you're in Detroit, give me a call. I want to take you out to lunch. So I said, I'm there every week. So I called him, and I go outside, and there he is waiting for me in a stretched Chevy. He said, you mind if I go look and see what you're doing? Come on, let's go. So I take him there, and I said, oh, by the way, most of the guys I hired from Corvette, so you probably know them. So he spent an hour talking to the guys and looking at the prototype, and he gets back in the car with me, and he says, what would you say if I said I'd leave General Motors and go to work for you as president? I said, I would kiss your ass. I'm about to do another thing. I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm not a manufacturer of a car. I would be absolutely great. What do you need? He said, well, if I quit, I lose $1.6 million. So I need $1.6 million to go be your president. I said, no problem. Get your lawyer and meet me in Philadelphia at the First National Bank of Philadelphia. And you'll meet John Bunning, the chairman. And I'll get you the money. I'll put some of my Subaru stock up. He said, that quick? I said, you want to do a slower? He said, no. They met me in Philadelphia. I told him, hey, John, the John Bunning, this is John DeLorean. Of course, everybody knew who John was. He was a very, very, what should I say, noticeable guy.
Yeah.
You couldn't miss him.
Charismatic.
Yeah, okay. He really was. And so John Bunning said, Malcolm, I think it's a great idea. Yeah, I'll give you the money. Everybody looked at each other. I said, we got a deal. And they said, wow, that was the quickest thing. It's been less than 24 hours than I talked to you. I said, John, I know how to move fast on that. I need you to do what I don't know how to do, and that's to build this car. He said, great. We shook hands, and he goes off. About 10 o'clock at night, I get a call from him. He's back in Detroit. He said, God, my lawyers never saw a deal go together so fast. He's drawing up the papers. And he said, but we need one little difference in the deal. What's that? He said, I need the money after taxes. So I hesitated, and I thought, let's see, that's another $300,000 or $400,000. I really do want John DeLorean. And then I started thinking, you know, we're both narcissists. He may be bigger narcissist than me, but we're both narcissists. I don't think I'm going to be interested in the, I'm thinking to myself now, I'm not talking to him. I'm thinking, I don't think I'm going to to where this next step. I said, John, I said, you know, I think we're going to have a problem down the road. I think we're going to start arguing about whose name goes on the back of the car. So why don't we just back off and wait a couple days and think about it to see if this really makes sense. He said, you know what? I agree. I said, I was getting a little nervous to move so fast. We continued to be friends, but I decided not to go that way, built the car, and then, of course, the, a couple of years later, the premier did what he did. I get a call from John DeLorean again. Malcolm, next time in Detroit, I'll have dinner. Sure, John. Next time it was, I gave him a call. We're out dinner. He said, well, I got an announcement. I said, I bet it's a big surprise. You're going to build a car with your name on the back. He said, you're right. And we started talking about it, and I told him, listen, Goldwing doors are what sold my car. Without the Goldwing doors, I don't think our car is that special. He said, I'm going to do the same thing, but I'm not going to electrify it like you did. All right. I said, what are you going to do about the paint factory? He said, I'm going to do it stainless steel. I said, really? You can do that? He said, yeah, well, I'm going to sell the car for $25,000. I sold my car, by the way, for $9,700. He said, I said, okay. I said, I'm going to give you a piece of marketing fact. I want you to listen to it. I don't want you to change anything, but I want you to listen to it and be prepared. And that is, no matter how terrific something is, like the color of a car, like the stainless steel, which I think people are going to go nuts for, when you have too many of them, they all lose the value. And that's why people have different color paints. Stainless is a different problem. You can't anodize it because it's dull, and people don't buy dull-looking cars. He said, I got it. I got it. I'm sure they're going to go for it. He said, I said, okay, just put that in the back of your head. Well, he then said one more thing. He said, can I use your original prototype so I can go raise some money? I said, absolutely. I said, you can use anything you want. No problem. He used my gray car, and that prototype, the one that was done by our dune buggy fabulous guy, was the car that you see he built today. And that car, oh, the last thing he asked is, where am I going to get the money? I said, how much money are you looking for? He said, a couple hundred million. I said, well, North Ireland came to see me and wanted me to build a factory there after they saw what happened to me in New Brunswick. And I told them, no, they killed people there. And I just wasn't willing to go to that because I like to be on site. He said, I don't care. If they give me the money, I'll be happy to be there. And he went there, and they gave him $300 million to do it. It cost me under 30, and I did it in less than 2 years. He spent 5 years and spent $300 million. And his problem was, after he built 5,000 cars, the sales start dropping off because he needed change of color. And he tried to anodize them, and they didn't go for it. And that was his downfall.
Interesting story. Interesting story.
Unfortunately, John couldn't take failure the way I ended up using it to make me stronger. It really hurt him a lot, and it was horrible to see. I went to visit him a couple times, and he was really a beaten man.
Interesting. So, what was the takeaway? Because the one thing that I've noticed, and I'm, you know, when I look in your past here, is, and I'm I can't think of the cliche right now, but you tried, failed, succeed. It's kind of like ride, wrench, repeat. You know, it's kind of like one of those.
Well,
deals.
Not exactly. Let's talk about it.
Okay, please.
Subaru failed in a car, but then I got the bigger car, and Subaru succeeded.
Okay.
So that was just a burp in the road. The Brooklyn failed because, not because we didn't have sales or not because of anything other than it got involved with politics.
Okay.
But yeah, I lost a lot of money no matter what the reason was on that one. I got made a lot of money on the Subaru stock. That stock went split 10 for 1 and went to 300. I took it public at $3 a share.
Well, No.
By the way, the next one was the Pininfarina and Bertone.
All right, yeah, let's go to that too, because that's where basically you can. So basically, would you say that you have this clever propensity, this propensity for this clever marketing, and then the sales, and that's so? Is that kind of like your strong point? I mean, it's kind of like you throw something against the wall and it sticks. In this particular case, with the Fiats and your deal there. Tell us about that a little bit, because I remember when they changed the name from the 124 Spider. So for our listeners, okay,
and then the
X19, and then later, because the designer was Bertone, okay, notably the Lamborghini Miura is a Bertone, okay, and then you've got Pininfarina, which is associated with Ferrari and other Italian.
Two of the great designers from Italy. Two
yes,
of the
exactly.
Greatest designers from Italy. Okay, here's that story. I was at an automotive news conference, and the guy sitting next to me, Tony Simonera, said, "By the way, did you hear Fiat is pulling out of the country?" Well, I had met Pininfarina and I had met Bertone in Turin separately when I was thinking about having them design a car for me, which I didn't, but we had conversation. I said, "What's going to happen to the cars that they build for Fiat?" He said, "I guess they're over. Fiat's pulling out." So I said, "Great." I said, "Come with me. We're going to go see Pininfarina and Bertone." And I called them both up, made an appointment, and we flew over there. And these two guys who lived in Turin, two of the great coach builders, had never met each other.
Whoa. Interesting.
I said to them, "Here's the deal. You're about to lose a big customer. Yeah, we're worried about it. We don't know what we're going to do. Here's the deal. Let's get Fiat to give you the engines and transmissions. And you call it a Pininfarina, you call it a Bertone X19, and I sell the car for you in the United States. And you have to repaint everything." And my guy, Tony, used to be in charge of consumer complaints for Fiat. Huh. So he knows everything wrong with both your cars, and I'm sending them over here for him to fix it before you get those cars to the United States. He said, "Yeah, but will Fiat do it?" Well, I spent 2 months convincing Fiat that it was better and smarter not to let these two guys end up maybe going bankrupt. And they finally let me do it, and we did it. We repainted them, and we did everything. And I set up distributors and dealers, and we were selling. I was making a couple million a month. And this went on for, I don't know, a year, year and a half, 2 years. And I get a call from Sergio Pininfarina. "Could I come over to meet him immediately?" I fly over there. He said, "Malcolm, I got bad news for you. I just made a deal with Cadillac to build the Cadillac Elante Pininfarina. It's going to sell for $55,000. We're going to build the bodies here, put them on 747s, and send them to Detroit." I said, "That's got to be the worst idea I ever heard." He said, "I agree, but they're paying me a lot of money. And the other thing they're saying is they don't want a 15,000 Pininfarina Spider being sold in the United States. And it's illegal for me to just cancel for that reason. But my clause says I can stop production, and I'm stopping production. And in effect, I'm giving you 6 months." I said, "Okay." I went back, my team. I had this great team doing this great business, making a lot of money, and just selling the Bertone wasn't going to happen because we were only selling a couple cars a dealer a month. I mean, we had 500 dealers, so it was 1,000 or 1,500, which we were making a lot of money on. But it doesn't matter. The end of the story is, what are we going to do? We're about to be out of business. So I took Tony and I said, "Go around the world, find me the cheapest car you can make that's being made that we can meet all the regulations, safety and emissions." And he came back with, "I got it, the Yugo, Yugoslavia."
Okay.
Said, "Where the hell is Yugoslavia? Aren't they a communist country?" He said, "Well, not really, sort of they were, but they're not." I said, "Oh my God." He said, "Yeah, well, it's a 30-year-old Fiat in a 50-year-old factory, but we can get what you want." So I flew over to see him. Oh my God. They had 6 inches of grease on the floor. People were smoking, putting the car together. The welders didn't wear goggles. They were burning out their eyes. Unbelievable. But I looked at it. I looked at Tony. I said, "Can we do this?" And he said, "Yep." Yeah. I said, "Okay." So we made a deal. Now, are you ready for the greatest story you ever heard?
I'm sitting down. Let me have it.
Okay. I am now in the Zurich VIP room waiting to go to Belgrade. We assigned the contract. This is my first meeting going to be with everybody in Kragujevac, Yugoslavia, to talk about how we're going to get started, which is going to be Tony and my oldest son, are going to live in Kravyevich, and they're going to watch everything every single day and bring in whoever they have to bring in, PPG for painting, whatever has to be done, they are there to do it, and they're supposed to do it and do it now. So I am sitting, I am in the bathroom of the VIP room peeing. And next to me, with a divider between us, I hear a voice like that. And I say, Henry, is that you? Yes. I said, Henry, isn't your president Larry Eagleburger? Yes. Isn't he Yugoslavia's most favorite son? Yes. I just signed it. And we're talking, by the way. We're both being. And I said, I just signed a deal with Yugoslavia. It's going to be the biggest deal in Yugoslavia. I think we ought to talk. Okay. And over the top comes a card from Henry Kissinger. I put it in my pocket. I zip up my pants. I turn around. He's not there. I go do my meeting. I fly back. My office at the time was on 5th Avenue and 51st Street. I walk in the door, and the secretary says to me, the first thing you're supposed to do is call Henry Kissinger. He wants to meet you right away. So I walk over to his office on Park Avenue. I walk in. They usher me right into his office. He sits down, and he says, okay. And Larry Eagleburger was there. Here's the deal. I'm going to be a consultant for your company, and Larry is going on your board of directors. It's going to cost you $250,000 a year. I said, fabulous. Shook hands. And that's what happened. I later found out from Larry, of course, the first thing Kissinger did was talk to all his people to find out what was really happening. And they saw how important we were going to be for Yugoslavia, and they decided it would be a good thing if they were on the inside of the game to know what was going on. And that's, so I had Henry Kissinger in Yugo as my advisor, and I had Larry Eagleburger as on my board. Huh. And, of course, every month we'd go back, and the ambassador to Yugoslavia would always have a dinner. And I can't tell you the story because it's a little bit rude. But we would meet all these very, the big deals of Yugoslavia every month, so they would get to know each, we would all get to know each other. And one day I get a call from Larry, we got to go back to Yugoslavia because Milosevic and his wife want to throw a luncheon for me. Now, I never heard their name. This was back in 1988. He was an up-and-coming guy, but Eagleburger and Kissinger thought it was important. So we fly back, and we go into this beautiful ballroom, and we're treated like kings, and everybody's being nice. And these two little people, this guy and his wife, were being really nice. And we spent about 2 hours. I said, Larry, I think it's time to go. We walk out the door. He says, well, what do you think? I mean, they really couldn't have been nicer. I said, I think I'm selling my stock as soon as I get back to the States. He said, what's your problem? I said, Larry, I have never felt evil before. And I showed him my hand, and my hair was standing up on my hand. He said, what are you talking about? I said, I don't know what I'm talking about, but I felt evil in there, and I'm getting the hell out. And I went out, and 30 days later, I sold out my stock for $20 million. And 2 years later, NATO put 5 missiles into the Yugo factory.
Oh.
And Gerald Milosevic and his wife killed millions of people.
Interesting, interesting. Lesson number two, watch the politics, right?
Oh, my God. That couldn't have been. I mean, thank God for that luncheon they wanted to have for me. And my instinct, I never felt that before. And every time I talk about it, I'm looking, my hair standing on my end.
Malcolm, we have a few minutes left, but I'll tell you what, we didn't even scratch the surface here. So here's what I want to do. I want to definitely invite you to come back next week so we can do part two with Malcolm Breckland. And we're going to get into Vision Vehicles, some of the other interesting stuff that you have been involved with. But since we have a couple minutes left, and I'm guessing what we got, about 2 minutes left, 3 minutes, something like that, give us a 2-3 minute story that would just of one of your escapades that was, you know, just kind of interesting, just something when you reflect that just puts a little like question mark in your head. Can you do?
Okay,
I know your stories are priceless, and they truly are. So we got 3 minutes.
Well, I'll get you started on what I'm about, what we're creating right now.
Okay.
It's now, well, no, I'll talk about the Chinese car. One of the things I decided in the early 21st century, I guess it is now, right, was I was going to look around the world to find a factory, a car factory, that instead of buying what they already built, they would do what I wanted them to build, and I would buy everything they built. I'd give them letters of credit, I'd buy everything, but they'd do exactly like I want, instead of me having to change, like, 528 changes to the Yugo. And so I went around the world. But before I went, I got one of my sons, who was a filmmaker, Jonathan, and I said, you got to live with me for a couple of years. Every single day, I want you to film everything I do, and I want you to put it into so all the dealers get to see what I'm doing. And he lived with me every day for a couple of years. We went everywhere in the world talking to every factory you can ever imagine, and we ended up in China. And I think another time is still there. And I had to make a deal with Chery Automotive. And I loved the president. He really understood what I wanted. He was ready to make the thing. He had a good factory going for him. And the only problem was they were the bastard child of the automobile world in China, because he built his factory without a permit from the Home Office, meaning the Canadian central government. But the people in his province were the old-time politicians who had a lot of pull. So instead of, you know, putting them out of business, they made him give 20% of the stock to SAIC, which was the biggest car company in China owned by the government, and made him call him SAIC Chery, which was sort of like made him embarrassed. And that's what happened when I met him. Now, we didn't want to go build a $10,000 car. We wanted to build a car that would look like a $35,000 car that we could sell for $20,000. And therefore, it was redefining the price of luxury. That's what our thing was going to be. And when we announced that in China, the Chinese government loved that so much that they said, you know what, SAIC is going to give you back the stock and take their name off, and you're Chery, and you own 100% of your stock, and we love that program. And then the president of Chery ended up being man of the year, and he gave us on camera, it was because of you, Mr. Bricklin, and what you were doing that made me man of the year and got us to be now the favorite automobile company of the Chinese government. I'll leave you at that.
How about that? Well, Malcolm, I want to thank you for hanging out with us here at Nostalgic Radio and Cars. If people want to find out more about you and your current project, how do they go about doing it real quick?
Well, they can Google me, I guess. There's all sorts of documentaries out there.
Well, that's true.
There's a book that just came out. I'm trying to remember what the hell the name is. I was just at the sign in Canada.
Super. Well, all right. So next week what we'll do is we'll pick up where you left off. We'll talk a little bit more about that. There's more to the Chery story, okay? And then we'll probably reflect back and forth, jumping in and out of the Subaru and the Bricklin thing, because that was kind of interesting.
Oh, I got lots of stories for you. Okay. Listen, I'm 85 years old. I got 50 years of 60-some years of stories.
All right. Well, Malcolm, you take care. Thank you very much for hanging out with us here at Nostalgic Radio and Car. It was truly a pleasure, and I look forward to having you on our show next week.
Good night, Robert. It was a pleasure.
Okay. Thank you very much. Hey, I want to thank all my listeners for tuning in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars. Don't forget to check us out here every Tuesday between 7 and 8 p.m. on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Big shout out to all my friends. Thank you guys for tuning in, for listening, and everything like that. Please share all this stuff on social media. You know, I mean, Facebook and Instagram. What's all that stuff, Bobby?
YouTube's the only one missed. Yep.
Yeah, YouTube. Okay, that's what I want to miss. But anyway, so, you know, and there's a lot of car shows coming up. Definitely check out FLACarshows.com. You can find out where all this stuff is going. In the meantime, get out, drive your cars, drive your boats, drive your motorcycles. Summer's around the corner. Stay safe, drive carefully, and love your family.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
Listen.
Day at the criminal trial for former president